Chapter 8.
Once Omus pulls his troops back, we'll talk the Bothans into behaving. Give it a month or two. Let everyone calm down and get used to a ceasefire, and we'll use that lull to regroup with Commonor, Fondor, and Bathawi to give Coruscant a pounding it'll never forget.
Corellian Prime Minister Durgedjan, discussing longer-term plans with Confederation Defense Staff. GAGHQ Locker Rooms, Coruscant, 2100 hours. Shevhu took a long look at Ben and handed him a small container. It was filled with a dark brown fluid.
"You look dead beat," said Shevhu. "But before you turn in for the night, there's a few loose ends to tie up."
Ben, slumped on a bench, with his back resting on his locker door, was ready to drop. He had to be up at 0300 to prep for the flight to Vulptor, and he still didn't know his final destination, or the location for the hit. That wasn't unusual, apparently. It was just as well he was used to improvising.
"I'm scoring 97%, sir."
Shevhu sounded as if he'd stifled a laugh. He exuded a sense of pity.
"It's hard to know what to say."
"I'm ready. Really, I am."
"I meant that it's amazing that we can pretty well train a sniper in a day. If he's a Jedi, of course."
Shevhu put the bottle in Ben's hand. There was the slow and steady drip of water somewhere in the locker rooms, and the scent of faintly herbal soap.
"You're being inserted ahead of time with Lecalf, and I'll be shadowing Omus's flight. We'll RV on Vulptor at Charby City Spaceport, because he's meeting Gedjan in one of the conference rooms there that they hire out for business meetings by the hour. Personally, I think GA Intel is insane to let him do that. No sterile area, no screening, no security except for two guys with him for close protection. But it's anonymous. There's no advance booking to trace. Charby is a slum, and we can stroll in."
"Won't someone recognize him?"
Shevhu pointed to the bottle of brown liquid.
"I don't think it'll even take some of this to let him get through a spaceport unrecognized. How many checks does a business passenger go through, landing in a private vessel?"
"One, at the Customs and Immigration Desk. And this is Vulptor, for goodness sake. Their security isn't exactly a ring of Durasteel. He could even use the rooms on the other side of that control, and he never has to be seen at all. Effectively, it all happens on the landing strip side."
Ben thought it through, seeing the spaceport in his mind's eye, adding permacrete and passengers to the holochart image of red and blue lines. He was getting used to thinking like this, and part of him relished solving the puzzle, while the other half wondered what was happening to him.
"In a way, it's better for us if he meets Gedjan in the conference rooms on the public side of customs," Ben said. "A bigger crowd out there for us to disappear into."
"I agree. In the end, we'll grab what chance we get."
Ben held the bottle up to the light.
"So what's this?"
"Hair dye. Most species tend to recall red-headed humans a bit too well. You're still a genetic minority, and Omus knows you well enough to look twice if he spots you."
"Tell me I don't have to wear makeup to cover my freckles."
Ben's mind was a couple of hours ahead, thinking of the few hours' sleep he could get on the flight. He could study the layout of the spaceport on his datapad. It was all going to go fine, he told himself.
"So the second vessel's for backup in case he diverts?"
"Partly, and partly so we have something incriminating to abandon on Vulptor. Read the label, dye your hair, and report to the landing strip at 2230. I'll see you there."
Shevhu started to walk away. Ben jumped to his feet.
"Sir, what's going to be incriminating?"
The captain always seemed old to Ben, but he was younger than Jason. 28, maybe. He looked at Ben with that mix of sadness and patience that Ben had seen on his dad's face too often. I think anyone would believe Corellians had neutralized Gedgen, given the right vessel abandoned at the port. You, now... Corellian registered? Corellian trace for forensics? You can do a Corellian accent, can't you? If push comes to shove and you need to speak, that is. There have to be plenty of Corellians with a grudge against him, knowing their politics. Ben thought of Uncle Han's accent, or what was left of it. He sounded more Coruscant-y these days.
Can do. But how do we know we won't fall over real Corellians trying to stop Gedgen doing a deal with the enemy?
That, said Shevu, would be unbelievably hilarious for all the wrong reasons, assuming he has a deal to put on the table anyway.
I'm going to kill someone. And in 24 hours, I'll be back here as if nothing's happened. Any reason why I can't take my vibroblade?
Ben fished it from his pocket and held it out to Shevu.
My mom gave it to me and, well, you know.
You can take whatever works for you, as long as you don't leave or carry evidence that links the hit to us. Shevu examined the blade. Yeah, I understand. He pulled down the neck of his shirt a little to reveal a gold chain. No ID, of course, but my girlfriend gave it to me, and I never go on patrol without it. It helped to know everyone got edgy before a mission and needed a little reminder of their loved ones. Shevu got halfway to the doors before he turned around and seemed to be working up to saying something. I realize your father might find it hard to accept what you do, Ben, but I'm proud of you, he said. Still, if I had a son, I wouldn't be letting him do this kind of thing until he was an adult. It's not as if we haven't got enough trained men to do it, but... Well, Colonel Solo has his reasons, I'm sure. Ben sat thinking over that statement for a while, and realized that Shevu had said father, not parents. Maybe he thought that his mother would understand a job like this. Ben felt he was hanging on to the relationship with his family by his fingertips. But there had been no more fights, and he didn't feel quite so angry about having to compromise. Maybe that was really what growing up was about, an increasing distance from parents, knowing that there would always be tomorrow, and that he didn't have to get what he wanted right now, and starting to understand the things they'd been through when they were younger. I wouldn't be letting him do this kind of thing until he was an adult. But his father had done this kind of thing, more or less. He'd just been a little older, that was all. This was no different from blowing up the Death Star, and plenty of ordinary people just doing their jobs had died when Luke Skywalker had done that. Ben was removing a single man. No bystanders. He'd remind Dad of that if it ever came out and he had to defend his decision. Dad would probably say Jason made him do it. Ben stood in the refresher with the dye worked into lather on his head and caught sight of himself in the mirror. He felt ridiculous. The foam looked mauve, and he wondered if something had gone horribly wrong. When he rinsed it off, though, his hair was brown, just brown. And he was looking at a stranger.
Good.
He needed to be someone else for all kinds of reasons. When his hair had dried, he took out the civilian clothes LeCalf had left for him. All Corellian style. All Corellian labels.
This is in case I get caught.
The thought chilled Ben, but it was standard procedure. Nobody had spoken to him about what would happen if he did get caught, and what interrogation might be like, but he could guess. They probably didn't know what advice to give a Jedi about resisting interrogation anyway. Maybe they thought he could just nudge a mind here and a thought there and walk out of the cell. Maybe he could. Ben checked himself in the mirror a few times, trying to see himself as a stranger might, and was satisfied that he looked unlike Ben Skywalker, and disturbingly like a Corellian boy a little older than he was, but blonde, Barrett Sy. He hadn't seen Sy since they'd rounded him up with the other Corellians. After that, Ben had stopped asking what happened, but he still wondered silently. He squatted down and placed his boots in the locker. Then he counted the various pieces of kit. Daily pair, battered raid pair for good luck, but no parade best pair. He couldn't imagine where they'd gone. No, actually, he could. LeCalf. Ben would find them full of something unmentionable just before kit inspection, or painted bright pink.
Jory, I'm going to think up something special for you, he said aloud, and grinned, wanting the diversion.
It was nice to be one of the boys. Ben slipped his datapad into his pocket, wondered where he was going to leave it for safekeeping, and went to pick up the Karpaki and some ammo packs from the armory. It was just a job, and he had to do it. The Skywalker's Apartment, Coruscant. Luke woke in a heart-pounding panic and reached out toward a hooded shape at the foot of the bed, knowing he was dreaming, but unable to stop himself from reacting to the specter that dissolved as he became fully awake. He hadn't had the dream of the menacing figure in the hooded cloak for a while. Now it was back. It was 4 in the morning, and Mara still hadn't come home. Usually, the forced dream vanished and just left him with that sick jolt in his gut as if he'd seen a speeder crash. But this was different. As he swung his legs over the side of the bed, he had a sense of someone still being in the room, and he was sure he wasn't asleep. He checked the chrono to make certain he wasn't still mired in the nightmare. 0410 hours. He wasn't. Luke reached for his lightsaber, which he'd been keeping on the nightstand lately, and made a cautious inspection of all the rooms. He couldn't sense flesh and blood anywhere, but he could detect something. The presence was so close now that he could almost feel breath on the back of his neck. And then he sensed amusement. The presence, now at the door to the apartment, he was sure, was like a cloud of billowing smoke in his mind. He could almost see it. As he felt it becoming more solid, more real, more here, it suddenly lit up as if a silent explosion had lifted it in a ball of soaring flame. Lumia. Lumia! Luke rushed to the front doors, at the same time concentrating hard on using the force to jam the 2 sets of doors in the corridor outside that stood between the apartment and the lifts. He'd trap her. She'd lied. Mara was right. All that nonsense on the resort satellite, all that "I mean you no harm" was just a feint, mocking his indecision. The doors parted with a gasp of air, and Luke sprang into the corridor with his lightsaber raised. 1 set of doors was wedged open with something, trying repeatedly to close, and making little mechanical groans each time the inner edges hit the obstruction and bounced back a few centimeters. There was no sign of Lumia. But she'd been here seconds before. Luke could almost taste her on the air. It was as if she'd sprayed perfume too liberally and was leaving a cloud wafting behind her. Except it was a scent of darkness, not rare oils. Frustrated and furious, he strode down the corridor to see what had jammed the doors apart. It was a pair of black boots, army boots with segmented Durasteel plates around the ankle, the kind that Ben wore, He parted the doors with a force push and squatted to recover the boots. They were Ben's. Not only did Luke recognize them, but he also felt Ben in them when he picked them up. Luke rarely jumped to conclusions, but he was certain who'd left them there and what the message was.
"If I can take personal items from your son, I can take him, too."
The thought hit Luke like a hard slap in the face. Maybe she's abducted Ben. He felt for his son in the Force and sensed no crisis. In fact, Ben seemed to be leaving a trace in the Force of someone soundly and safely asleep. How long he'd stay that way, though, Luke wasn't ready to bet. He went back into the apartment to grab his jacket, opening his comlink to Jason as he went. He didn't care what time it was. Jason answered immediately. It seemed he didn't sleep much either.
"Where's Ben?" Luke demanded.
"Asleep, Luke." Jason had that calm, mock-soothing tone that did anything but soothe him.
Patronizing little jerk.
"Is there a problem?"
"Have you had any intruders in GAGHQ tonight?"
Jason gave a quiet little laugh.
"We're the ones who do the forced entry, Luke."
"Someone's left Ben's boots here as a calling card."
"I don't understand. Did he leave them behind?"
"He doesn't keep any of his uniform at our place. Someone's taken them from your headquarters, and as juvenile a prank as it seems—"
Luke almost stopped short of mentioning Lumia, because he had no idea yet how deep her inroads into the GAG had become, or even if Jason was consciously aware of them. But he was angry and scared for his boy, and that always colored his judgment.
"It's Lumia. She's taunting me, showing me she can get at Ben any time she pleases."
Jason was silent. Luke waited.
"I can't give you an explanation for that. I really can't," Jason said eventually.
"Well, Lumia's jerking my chain, as she probably was at Galatter, too."
"Stupid, stupid, stupid. How could I ever have been fooled like that?"
"And she has someone inside your organization. So I suggest you get that sorted out fast."
"We've had one investigation already and found nothing. We'll have another if it makes you happier."
Jason's voice sounded both offended and irritated, but Luke couldn't even take that at face value any longer.
"But I can assure you, Ben is safe. He's even got pretty good protection right next to him. Lieutenant LeCalf."
"Nice to see the guy get promoted. He strikes me as being very loyal to you."
"As his grandfather was to Vader, Luke. You can't buy loyalty like that. Ben's in good hands. Let's talk again in the morning."
Luke shut the link dead. No, the morning wouldn't do, and there was no point talking to Jason, who was clearly trussed and tied as far as Lumia's influence was concerned. She was right under his nose. So much for what he'd learned about arcane force techniques during his 5-year sabbatical. Luke jogged to the landing pad and tore off in the speeder, maybe a little faster than was safe. Lumia had left a very clear trail, beckoning Luke to follow. Well, he wasn't falling for that. It had to be a diversion, or an ambush.
"I've never been afraid of an ambush, Lumia. I'll walk into one happily, knowing my enemies are there.
Nice try.
I'm coming, don't you worry."
He resisted the impulse to drop everything and charge after her trail. She was still near, or at least still on Coruscant. He could feel it. But he had to talk to Mara first, and she was at Starfighter Command. He opened the comlink. How could I have let this go on for so long? I don't care if I'm expected to be the elder statesman. This stops. This stops now.
Mara, we have a problem, he said. Lumia.
I'm with Jaina, sweetheart. Do you want me to...
She's been outside our apartment.
Luke picked his words a little more carefully now. Mara would go ballistic as soon as he mentioned Ben's boots. It was a sinister, silent threat.
Stay where you are. I'll be there in a few minutes.
When there's a trail going cold?
Or a diversion.
Or a trail she wants you to think is a diversion.
Yes, Mara and Lumia both had that layer-upon-layer way of thinking, just as Palpatine had taught them. I know what she wants, he said, and shut the link.
Luke broke the traffic regulations a dozen times. He skipped out of the regulated skylanes, always busy on Coruscant, and got a discordant blast of horns from vessels whose noses he nearly clipped. In the way of automatic actions, his mind slipped into deep contemplation as he took the familiar route to Starfighter Command. I know what my problem is. He thought back 40 years, when he'd been ready to rush to the aid of a total stranger on the basis of a message in an intercepted hologram. The plea for rescue hadn't even been aimed at him, but he'd responded to it anyway, without thinking, without questioning, because it had felt like something he had to do. And now I act sensibly and soberly, because I'm leader of the Jedi Council, and I'm not 19 anymore. But it wasn't his nature. It wasn't what he did best. Just because he had whatever gifts the Force had given him more generously than other Jedi, it didn't mean he was cut out for... management. Yes, management. That was it. He thought of the nagging frustration he always felt when he sent other Jedi on missions, and how he thought that was just reluctance to admit it was the turn of the young Jedi to take on the physical derring do while he made wise judgments in the chamber. Sitting on my backside. What he did best was right wrongs, and if he couldn't put this right for his only child, then what was he? I forgot who I am. He was an uncomplicated man who cared enough about his friends and family to die for them, if that was what it took to save them. He was, as Mara told him at least once a day, a farm boy. He was Luke Skywalker, and if he could take on the Empire without a second thought, he could certainly finish off one of the last pitiful remnants of its rule. Lumia. GA Starfighter Command, Coruscant.
You know, this always works on the crime holovids.
Mara added another illuminated marker to the holochart of the galaxy and stepped back to see if a pattern of Lumia's movements emerged. It was a big galaxy, and Lumia seemed to cover a lot of space, which now included Mara's own front doors.
Keep it up, cyborg girl. You're just focusing me better.
Might as well use the time productively.
Jaina leaned over the desk and tapped in more coordinates. Now that she was a civilian again, she was here in her capacity as a Jedi working for Luke Skywalker and the Council. But she slipped back into Fleetways fast.
So let's add in Alima's known whereabouts. Well, there's no pattern there either. Do you think it's a case of Alima stalking Lumia, looking for scraps from her table? Why do those two seem to hang out together?
They both need a lot of spare parts.
Mara stifled a laugh.
That's not nice, Jaina.
Seriously, they haven't got enough functioning parts to make one decent humanoid between them.
They're both good at hiding, whether by disguising their presence or erasing the memory of being seen. Mara was feeling around her in the force, just waiting for Lumia to spring from nowhere. She could sense her, but not near. Lumia's broken her cover, and she's not stupid, so she wants to be seen. Jaina kept checking the chrono on the wall, and then looking at her own timepiece.
Did you go to see Jason?
Yes.
And?
You want the truth, Jaina?
Don't I always?
Lumia's bending him somehow. Okay, no need to tell me I was the last person to notice that.
I wasn't going to. Did you mention that?
Yes. I thought it was time someone dropped a hint that we'd noticed our Jason had turned into a monster. Mara was getting angry, and her honest inner voice told her that the only person who deserved that anger was herself, for defending Jason, while the fact that things were going disastrously wrong was staring her in the face. But Mara was human, and scared for Ben, and it boiled over onto Jaina.
Forgive me for asking, but being his twin, have you never had this out with him?
I tried. He responded with a court-martial charge, remember?
I can't help thinking that you might have tried slugging him.
Suddenly he's my responsibility? I'm the one who said he was going dark way back.
Okay, okay, I'm sorry.
Mara put her hands up in mock submission. She could apologize, but she couldn't retract her acid tone, and she regretted that.
Okay, none of my business.
Spit it out, Mara.
I just don't get how you can be so caught up in worrying whether you want Jag or Zek when your own brother's going to pieces and taking others with him.
Whoa!
Sorry. I said it was none of my business.
Well, you said it, so... Yes. I want to be distracted by personal issues, because otherwise I'd go nuts trying to understand why Jason's doing what he's doing to our parents.
Maybe it's time we all faced that. Together.
There was an awkward silence. Mara wanted to tell Jaina that she was a grown woman now, and it was time to stop messing around like a teenager, and that Ben was more adult at 14 than she was at 31. It was spiteful, partly true, and partly fueled by Mara's incomprehension of anyone who wasn't as totally focused on the mission as she was, to the exclusion of all else. She kept her thoughts to herself. It was a sign of weary middle age, along with gray hairs and fading stretch marks.
I spent my whole youth on duty for the Emperor. I never had the freedom that Jaina's always had, and a little bit of me resents that now.
It wasn't Jaina's fault. She was headstrong and passionate like her father, but she hadn't quite found the silent, hidden durasteel of her mother yet.
She'll rise to the challenge when it comes. But if this isn't it, I don't know what is.
Jaina had her head down, hair forming a dark curtain as she leaned over the desk, pretending to be absorbed in the chart. But Mara could feel she was hurt. It wasn't the first time in recent weeks. Mara would make it up to her when she calmed down. Families had spats all the time. The storms blew over. "Change of plan," said Luke, stepping out of the turbo lift with his hair disheveled and a bag in one hand. Sometimes he had that "don't stop me" look, and he had it now. It always made Mara want to stop him. "I'm going after Lumia."
"Enough." "No, you're not," Mara said. "You're too close to this. She's baiting you."
Luke dumped the bag on the desk, disrupting the holochart. Jaina stepped back.
"Ben's boots," said Luke.
"And the point is..."
"Deposited at our apartment by Lumia."
Mara put her hand on the boots and felt the remnants of dark energy. Now she was mad. cold, clear, icy mad. She's been into GAGHQ, or Jason's apartment. I don't know which idea I like less. I need to settle this with her. It is, as some admiral once said, a trap for her, biting off more than she can chew. Jaina glanced at them both, still looking a little wounded.
Uncle Luke, I'll stick my nose in here and say it's better if we go after Lumia now, because she's clearly playing a game, and I've never seen you angry like this before.
Luke, the question to ask yourself is this, Mara said, pulling on her jacket and checking her personal weapons. What will you do when you catch her? Luke swallowed hard. I know what I have to do. And what was that conversation we had the other day? About being fit for the role? Me, trained killer? You, honest guardian of right? Lightsaber, vibroblades, holdout blaster, flechette launcher, and the last of my transponders. Check. Here's the plan. You keep an eye on Jason while I go after her.
I'm coming too, Jaina said. I'd hate to miss Alima if she shows up.
Things were getting back to normal then. Mara would apologize when they were on their way, and Luke was making sure that he knew what Jason was up to, in case Lumia was staging an elaborate diversion to draw them all away from Coruscant. Luke looked at his hands. I know you're right. It doesn't feel right, but I know I shouldn't be going after her bent on vengeance. And I don't know what it's going to take to make me kill her. And nothing short of that makes sense now. Mara nodded and hit the comm to the hangar ground crew.
Stand by an X-wing, please.
She pulled on her gloves, the fingerless ones, that gave her a good grip but still let her feel the weapon.
I'm going back, starting from the apartment, and tracking her from there. She wants to leave a nice trail? She's found just the right person to follow it. I'll sort this out, because it's my fault it got this far.
I should have gone straight after her, and then you wouldn't have talked me out of this, said Luke.
Jaina's dead right. You have too much history with Lumia, and you're too stoked up. You have to kill cold.
Luke looked heartbroken for a moment. It wasn't disappointment that he was losing the argument to her, because there was no argument. It was common sense. Just because they were family didn't mean that military best practice went out the window. But something had struck him that he didn't like, something more than Lumia's constant threats to Ben. I hate it when you're right, he said, and managed to smile. Jason says Ben's asleep, and it seems that way, so he's okay.
There you go, said Mara.
She still hadn't told Luke that Ben could shut down in the Force. She'd have a little chat with her son about that first.
We're off now. Keep tabs on Jason. Go and have a concerned avuncular chat with him over calf if you have to. But be around in case that's where your ex is heading.
She patted Luke's cheek and winked, wanting to make light of it so he didn't see how much Lumia was getting to her.
I might be going gray, farm boy, and I don't have her dramatic dress sense, but at least what I've got is all flesh and blood.
Luke almost laughed. Mara tapped her forefinger to her brow in a mock salute and walked off with Jaina. When she got in the turbo lift, she checked her datapad to see where Ben's transponder had gotten to.
If you've left that blade in your locker, Ben...
A little earlier, it had shown up on the datapad's small screen as a static blip in Galactic City, in GAGHQ. Now, it didn't. Mara never panicked, but she reserved the right to professional apprehension. She switched the scale of the chart.
"What's wrong?"
Jaina asked.
"Nothing." "Where are you?"
"Nothing at all." Mara flicked through ever larger scales of screen until she picked up the transponder blip again. And the coordinates didn't make sense. Ben appeared to be on Vulptor.
"What takes you there, Ben? Vulptor's not in the war."
If she told Luke, with the head of steam he'd built up, she knew he'd go in with all cannons blazing. So she simply smiled at Jaina, ready to let Lumia play her game of tag before Mara finally separated her smug head from her metal body, ending her feud with the Skywalkers once and for all.
"I'm coming, Cyborg. It's time."